You know, if you haven't checked out What Chaos yet, you oughta, because we've had all your favorite players on the show. I'm talking Seth Jones, Linus Solmark, Connor Bedard, whoever it may be.
We're live every day on YouTube at noon Eastern, but also available on all podcast platforms, including the one you're listening to right now.
We got guests, and yeah, we're also doing a bit of chit-chat, goofing around, laughing at what makes us laugh in hockey.
So regardless of how deep you are into your hockey fandom, come listen to What Chaos. We'll talk about your favorite team, we'll talk about your least favorite team, and everybody in between, and we're having a ton of fun doing it every single day, Monday through Thursday. It's What Chaos, presented by All City Network.
DNVR, Avalanche podcast.
Go DNVR when you sign up for a new account to get amazing odds boosts every single day. Rudo, AJ, Megan, and Jesse coming at you live on a Wednesday.
The worst day, in fact, of the week. Everybody wants to talk about Mondays, but Wednesdays are garbage.
Not a hump day fan?
No, fuck Wednesday.
Did you guys know the woot woot after an Avs goal is from the Geico Hump Day commercial?
Yes.
Very odd thing to know.
It was like 3 years ago.
Yeah, just remember being around for it.
Yeah, it was like 3 years ago, and we were sitting there. I don't even remember who I was sitting next to, but I was like, "Where is that from?" And then it was like 2 days later. Like, and we started talking about where is it from? Where could it possibly be from? Oh, I think it's just a sound effect they made. And then I was just like walking, like the TV was on in the background a couple days later. And I heard the hump day, whoop, whoop. And I like stopped me in my tracks. I was like, that's it. Oh my God.
Sometimes you find things out you didn't know, I guess.
There you go.
Hopefully we can learn you something you didn't know about game one here. We might talk about the Eagles a little bit later in the show too, given the state of Colorado, at least when it comes to hockey, still hasn't lost a playoff game this year. So
did the Grizzlies lose yet?
I don't know if the Grizzlies have. I haven't kept up with the ECHL playoff.
Yeah, but they're in Utah.
They are technically in Utah.
Yeah, but that's Avalanche organization.
Yeah, but he said state of Colorado, so same, but different.
True.
I just want to know if the Avs organization has lost in the postseason yet.
Yeah, Megan decided to live in a place that had to test their fire alarms today, so
just as we were getting ready to do this.
By the way, terrifying voice in your apartment, Megan.
Yeah,
my apartment doesn't do that. They just set off the fire alarms. They're just like, good luck.
Yeah,
maybe it's a test, you might die.
As we were getting set up, hearing like the PSA for it was like a little disconcerting.
So you got all sorts of voices on
Alarm. Just like is this now like a real person on the intercom?
Evacuate the building by the nearest exit. Do not use the
Wow. Wow. That fire alarm is something that would be going off for eternity in purgatory.
Yeah. Please evacuate. For some reason, the word evacuate made that just like that much more ominous. Not like, oh, proceed to the nearest exit. Get out. Evacuate now.
All right. Let's dive into some actual hockey talk here. On paper, I'm still pretty confident that the Avs dominated St. Louis the other night. But AJ, which, by the way, if you haven't, go read his piece on the coaching matchup and the line matchups from game one. Highly recommend you go check that out. But give us some highlights here, AJ.
Yeah, basically, if St. Louis is going to run the 11-7 alignment that they ran last night and that they ran at the end of the Minnesota series, which is why I thought it was interesting to why I wanted to write about it, because they're running with this. Torrey Krug is hurt. Marco Scandella is hurt. They're trying to They're trying to piece together their defense with a couple of different guys who aren't any good. And the best way that they can kind of attack Colorado's lineup is with 11-7. And defensively, there isn't anything that St. Louis can do. There's no matchup that goes their way. Every single one of those.
You're trying to tell me Cali Rosen can't hang?
Yeah, Cali Rosen doesn't play special teams, so he's exclusively an even strength player, and he gets rocked at even strength. So, not great. But, like, Cali Rosen and Justin Falk is their, like, actual second pairing. Like, they have chosen to do that. And Nick Leddy and Colton Pareko, their top pairing. So that's their, like, that's where they're going. That's what they've decided to do. And the 11-7 alignment basically allows for them to focus mostly on their top nine forwards, which is really like their top eight, because Barbashev is sort of a half step below those eight guys. And they can go, and with the Colorado playing 12-6, they can. You know, kind of hunt out Colorado's like third and fourth lines with a third line full of guys that scored 20 goals and 60 points this year. Like, it's a very, very deep forward core. So they've got, that's like their advantage, is that they've got Brandon Saad on their third line and the Avs have Nicholas Aubé-Kubel. And in theory, going after Colorado's bottom six with that forward core should be advantageous. And last night, it just wasn't.
No.
Confer's line was just fine. Confer's line broke even against the second line of St. Louis, and then won its matchup against the third line.
They were getting caved for the first two periods, though.
Okay, well,
but at the end of the game,
three and a half periods in the game last night.
You're right.
So that's where Colorado is going to feel comfortable. Hey, if that's how it's going for you, and that's the result that they got, is that Confer, Burakovsky, and Aubé-Kubel all ended up like deeply positive in shot metrics and scoring chances and all that. Great.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the metrics of that overtime period, and it's hard to argue against anything the Avs did. Because
yeah, I mean, the overtime was
outrageous.
Yeah, like it's one team wanted to win that game, and the other wanted to watch Jordan Binnington make saves. So.
True. As you kind of dig through this, because we did mention this the other night, but how valuable is the Avs' defensive matchups here? Because obviously Girard and Manson get the goals, win the game for them. But going beyond that, you mentioned the injuries St. Louis is battling through. We saw it against Nashville as well. The defense activating is just something teams struggle with against Colorado.
Yeah, and now with the current alignment, I mean, with these three set pairings that they have, you know, Taves McCarr is obviously a handful. Girard and Manson has been problematic since they got put together the last month of the season. And with Byram and EJ, they are as solid a third pairing as you'll find in the NHL right now. Byram EJ might be the best third pairing remaining in the postseason. And that's going to be a chess piece that the Avs have in every series that they go into, is that they can comfortably put their third pairing out with their top line and not feel like they're giving a ton up. Like there's still the potential that they can make plays on offense, that they can generate offense, that they can get scoring chances. I mean, EJ should have had a goal last night. Byram should have had an assist. Like, let's be real here. Those guys should have gotten some of the pub that Girard and Manson ended up with.
until EJ biffed it, but
yeah, well, you got to finish. And
well, that's I don't know. That's a tough one. And this coming from me, I don't put that on like that's such shit luck. I was talking to I think Peter Baugh this morning, and just like you watch that reverse angle, and I mean that puck just skips on him.
Yeah, it's a bouncing puck, but I mean, dude, it's an open net. You got to finish.
I mean, it's a bouncing puck.
there's
context there.
The dude had a week and a half to settle that thing and still shoot it into an empty net. Like, I don't know.
Like, he gets a piece of it and it's on net. Like, he made it work. But he gave Binnington every opportunity to just flop the arm out there. And, he just didn't finish it. He, bouncing puck or whatever. Homie's in the NHL.
Yeah. not your night, it's not your night, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, that's like the story of Colorado's night. They left goals on the ice all night. So, bouncing puck posts, whatever you want to talk about it. Like, they left goals on the ice. That's on them. That's all it is. It's how hockey works, but they left goals out there.
Jesse, you were in the building. I'm curious what the atmosphere was for this game, because obviously it's a playoff game. It's going to be hype. Yeah. But was there a certain level of frustration with the five posts that the Avs hit? With all of that building throughout the game, did it cost them home ice advantage a little bit? Were the fans engaged still, even with all of the nonsense?
Yeah, so it was funny because the game started, and it's almost impossible to ever replicate like that energy from round one, game one, first playoff game.
Yeah,
but like there was good energy in the building, and once it got going, you could tell that first 5 minutes, the building just wanted a goal. Like it was ready to really start rocking. St. Louis scored, and that really that kind of sucked the air out a bit. But as that period wore on and the Avs started upping the pressure, there wasn't that like nervous tension there normally is at an intermission if you're down. And then they just started pouring it on so heavily at the start of the second that it kind of got everyone back into that start of the game vibe where everyone was just waiting for the goal. You didn't want St. Louis to get that next one, because I feel like that really would have been kind of like a gut punch for the crowd and it would have taken him completely out of it. Once Val scored that goal, though, I mean, the frustration, in terms of them not being able to find a goal didn't seem to impact like the energy in the building. And I think a lot of that was just because after the first period, for the vast majority, obviously there's pockets here and there, but they carried the play so heavily that it was easy for the crowd to stay engaged, which, I try not to put too much stock into how the crowd affects the teams on the ice, because crowd's not on the ice. But, this team, you can't argue with their home record this year. There's something they seem to gain off of a high energy crowd. But I really do. I think that it was kind of like everything was just kind of like feeding itself. They were pushing, which was feeding the crowd, and the crowd was feeding them to continue pushing the way that they were. I was actually impressed at how much the building stayed engaged in honestly what was like a pretty frustrating game.
How much credit do the Avs get for being mentally tough in this game? Because yes, certainly from period two onward, they completely dominated St. Louis at 5-on-5. There's no doubt there, but I don't think we give the Avs enough credit, at least this year's version of the Avs, enough credit for things happen and they kind of just stay even keel. We've seen previous years where when things don't go their way, the Avs start to get frustrated. They start gripping the sticks a little bit too high, too tight. Is this, tip of the cap to the Avs for staying in the moment? Or is this, they dominated the game, so it's whatever?
Well, dude, I just wrote a piece earlier this week talking about exactly that. That is what I haven't been able to like put my finger on it all year, what it is. But it's exactly what you're talking about. And I noticed it most significantly in game two of the first round. I mean, dominant isn't even like enough of a word to describe. Here we go. Hell yeah.
Corn Bob.
he gone.
The way that the Avs, controlled game two against Nashville, they were everywhere. If it wasn't for Connor Ingram, that score is 9-0, right? That was a game that I think in the past, Avs teams of old would have lost that game in overtime. Ripping the stick too tight, trying to force passes. And it kind of felt the same way last night, but in both instances, stuck with their process and just kept doing the same thing and trusted, as long as we keep doing this, the puck will eventually go in and we'll be on the right side of this. Jared Bednar has talked about that over the course of the season, that if we come every night and put in the work and follow our process, more often than not, things are going to go our way. And throw over the course of a game, if you stick to your process and put in the work, more times than not, the game is going to go your way. And I thought that was another great example of that last night.
Okay. Megan, you have very much sold me on EJ Condor lore. AJ's talking about the third pairing being maybe the best left in the playoffs. I want to look ahead a little bit here. How important is it that the Avs third pair, and to a lesser extent their second pair, stay as good as they have been in the playoffs so far?
That's hilarious timing.
Did the internet crap out for a lot of other people?
Just you.
I heard
somebody's having the worst day.
Yeah.
Was it just me? I froze.
Yeah, it was just you.
Oh no.
And it was on the breath second. In to start talking.
Yeah.
It was amazing timing.
Oh really my gosh. I'll be right back. Hold on.
All right. Well, Megan sorts out her internet. We are brought to you by Breckenridge Brewery, the official beer of DNVR. You can get 8 different kinds on tap down at the DNVR bar. And you can also find it at a local liquor store near you. Also, Breck Brew is sending 2 Avs fans to every home playoff game. Yes, that includes the one tomorrow. Yes, that includes round 3. Yes, that includes the cup finals if the Avs make it that far. So go to breckbrew.com. Get yourself sorted out. Get yourself a chance to win some playoff tickets. Go to that awesome building and experience the vibe. Because if you've never been to an NHL playoff game, you cannot describe it to someone. You actually just have to go to one. So go check that out for sure. Also brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, number one rated sportsbook app out there. If you go and use code DNVR when you sign up for a new account today, you can get a $5 bet on any NBA playoff game that you don't have to win. You just have to make it. And you get $150 in free bets on DraftKings to go bet on whatever you want under the sun. Doesn't matter whether it's hockey, baseball, football, genuinely anything that you can think of that is a sport that you can bet on. Let's see. Yep. They got the American Cornhole League coming up on Friday. You can bet on that. They have some Ultimate Frisbee. And the New York Empire are the favorites in Ultimate Frisbee. They have another chess tournament tomorrow. You can bet on that. You name it. You can bet on.
Are there props in chess, or is it just betting on winners?
I only see winner's bets at the moment.
Damn.
But live betting, you never know.
Just curious, because some chess props could be fun.
There you go. You can bet your mortgage on the Rapids like I do every game. Perfect. a great option for you. either way, head over to DraftKings Sportsbook. Use the DNVR code. Must be 21 or older. Colorado only. Other terms, restrictions, and conditions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Of course, if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Also, great time to sign up for a DNVR Avalanche membership. obviously you get all of our amazing playoff coverage, whether it be supporting us for all these YouTube videos or getting all the written content that we have on the site. Highly recommend either way you get in on that. If you get the annual membership, it also comes with a free shirt. I believe there's still a few Kadri shirts left. Not many. They might not have your size. It just depends on what's left. Still have the playoff shirt that we did with Breck Brew 2 that you can get with Howler on it. So
beautiful shirt.
It is dope. It really is amazing. So go check those out. Go consider supporting us with the DNVR Avalanche membership. Yeah, there's the shirts right there. Look at those. Look at those amazing things. Could be, you know, that shirt only has two cups on it. That could be a limited time only thing with only two cups.
Outdated, hopefully.
Yeah, that's the idea, at least. All right. Second period of the DNVR Avalanche podcast. Hopefully, Megan is good to go. Wanted your thoughts on the importance of the third pairing going forward in these playoffs and how much of a difference they make for the Avs.
Well, it only adds to their depth, and specific to Johnsson and Byram, they're both players that I think are, under different circumstances, looking better at a gradual pace at the perfect time. Like Byram, obviously, his circumstances are returning from a serious injury, but he has been a little less visible since his return, but I'm starting to see him improve and grow more comfortable out there. And kind of similarly with EJ, he's finding areas of his game that I think I wouldn't trust him to capitalize on earlier in the season, but it's working for him right now. And so that just only adds to the Avs' D core depth. And it makes, you know, we talked about matchups earlier in the pod. That just makes it harder to match up against the Avs.
Yep.
I think this is a third pairing that would be a second pairing on a different NHL team.
I have a follow-up question. Did EJ rope-a-dope us a little this year? Was he just cruising through the regular season, and then once he was healthy for the playoffs, he was like, all right, the real Eric Johnsson is back, baby. Because he looks totally different. The five playoff games have been his five best games of the season.
Oh, dude, I think it goes beyond this season. Like, you know, Jared Bednar said this morning, he thinks these have been the five best games he's played since Bednar got to town. And, like, obviously, I can't think of every Eric Johnsson game over the last 5 years, but, like, these are right up there. Like, he's been great. He's been awesome, great, man, in these first five games. Yeah, no, he's been great. But no, you know, Megan, you make a good point there about matchups. And that's something that, you know, you and I have talked about up in the press box. We've talked about on this show. The Avs, the three D pairings as they are constructed right now, obviously when they're healthy, that is their biggest X factor in every game, every playoff series. And you go back to, again, game two of round one in overtime. It's the fourth line forwards for the Avs with Cale Makar and Devon Toews on defense. You have the two best offensive players on the ice, and Cale Makar ends up being the one scoring the goal. Their D pairings, from their top pairing down to their third pairing, with the way that they're playing right now, are their biggest weapon in terms of matchups right now in the playoffs.
And the thing is, like, it goes beyond, for me at least, just playing well, which they absolutely are. You've seen the offensive impact of the Avs defense. We've talked about it a ton. As a third pairing, Eric Johnsson and Bowen Byram through these five games have only been on the ice at 5-on-5 for one goal against in five playoff games. If that's what you're getting out of your third pair, like, they've also been on the ice for five goals for, by the way, which is great. But if your third pairing is giving up one goal against every five games, I mean, that's an unbelievable boon to a hockey team. That we talk about these bottom pairings, fourth line, where you're like, oh, if you can just get by with those guys, and they're crushing teams with them. It's way more than just getting by.
Yeah. For the record, I literally have this in front of me. EJ and Byram, 53-55 played at 5v5 in the postseason. Corsi is 71%. Shots for is 69%. Expected goals for is 70%. Scoring chances is 79%. And high danger chances is 76%. So there isn't an aspect of any of this that they're not dominating in. The one thing is that they are getting sheltered.
Well, they are a third pair.
That's literally their entire job.
Big surprise. But yes, their offensive zone starts are a little bit high, but also the Avs, because of their territorial dominance through five games, start in the offensive zone more often than other teams. So all of their pairings have are higher in offensive zone starts than any of their other pairing.
Who wants to talk about the Avs' flexibility? Because I do think we saw a good amount of that in game one. Burkowski dropping down to the third line at times. Some other random switches and swaps. We've seen them YOLO Byram occasionally up with Makar for an offensive zone faceoff or things like that. Do we expect to see more of that, particularly once the Avs go on the road against St. Louis, or where is that headed?
I don't. I think that one of the big feathers in Bednar's cap and Colorado's cap right now is the stability that they have. They don't need to tinker. Each one of their pairings gives them strong defensive presence with offensive upside. You just don't need to mess with it if you don't want to. Now, coming off of, you know, if they are coming off of a penalty kill or a power play or whatever, you know how that can get a little jumbled. Because Taves and Girard play together, and so things can get a little, as they work their way back into their normal alignment after that, then you might see a little bit of shifting there. But otherwise, they can just roll their pairings just as is. They're very comfortable playing together, and I think Bednar and Pratt have to do less tinkering than they ever have, because they have confidence in each of those pairings, and there is two-way upside. This is not like Nemeth Graves or Johnson and Johnson, where you're like, oh well, defensively you hope that they're good. None of those pairings are like that. They can all score, they can all drive offense, they can all create, and they have. The all three of those pairings have generated a ton of scoring chances.
So are you asking Rudo just about the D pairings, or are you asking about just in general?
No, forwards too, just total.
So I disagree with AJ, but I agree with a lot of what he just said. I agree with a lot of what he just said, but I do think that they are going to just kind of keep things, you know, fresh. I think that's why they experimented with so much down the stretch. I think that's why Jared Bednar is being so extra, you know, little cute with his lineups and all that stuff. I think he wants to have as many different looks to throw at teams as possible. And where I agree with AJ is I don't think they're going to tinker with the lines. I think they are always going to come back to these pairings that we're seeing and the lineups that you're seeing start every game. But I do think he likes that. There was twice that I can think of off the top of my head last night. He got an offensive zone start, and one time he went with Makar Girard. One time he went with Makar Byram. There was a bunch of times he went with Makar Taves. I just think he's going to try to give different looks, especially when you're playing a team that's got the depth that St. Louis does to be able to match the Avs. I just think that, especially when you're in St. Louis, if they're going to try to get specific matchups, cool. I'll throw a couple different combinations out there you aren't really ready for, and you know, make you kind of think twice. So I think he'll do that, but I do agree with AJ that largely I don't think you're going to see them changing things up to start games. I think they'll experiment within the 60 minutes.
Okay. So we have one, keep it the same, one, experiment. Megan, you're the tiebreaker.
I feel like too, my stance feels like it's a middle ground between both of these, but it's because what I think you're talking about are situational in-game adjustments that happen for maybe a singular shift. And I think that is a strength of the Avalanche to be able to do that for something like an ozone face-off, right? They can, especially with home ice and last change, make little in-game adjustments to give them the greatest advantage possible. But ultimately, I think they go back to the same pairs, the same lines, because those are what works for them. But I think it is still a strength that they can make little tweaks in-game just situationally.
100%.
push comes to shove, Avs go back to three-headed monster, or is Nuke stuck on that top line?
After what the Kadri, Lekin, and Landeskog trio did last night,
it was pretty nuts.
I'm not messing with that a whole lot. I mean, the occasional like last shift of the period, throw him out there, sure. But
well, and there was one last night.
Just don't think that for an extended period of time. No.
Yeah, no, I'm fully with AJ. There was one shift last night where I think the Avs got the Blues stuck out there on like consecutive icings, and for the second icing, they swapped Nuke for Landy. But that was like what AJ was just saying. There was 90 seconds left in the period. That was probably going to be that line's last shift, before the intermission. Again, I just think, like Megan was saying, that's a great option to have in your back pocket because you know that that has the chemistry there and that's your kind of big guns. But with the way that the Landeskog line played last night and as good as Nichushkin has been on that top line, just leave it.
Let it ride. Okay. Here for it. We are brought to you by a company. Yes. Evoca TV. In fact, if you didn't know, there's a channel on Evoca TV that broadcasts DNVR now, which is the coolest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. So go get Evoca TV just for that. You can watch Altitude and then swap it over, right, the DNVR channel, and catch the post-game show like that, or AT&T Sports Network, or the national channels if you're trying to watch football or catch some ESPN hockey or otherwise. So go over to evoca.tv/DNVR. That's evoca.tv/DNVR. When you use the DNVR code, the first 3 months, just $15 a month, which is absurdly cheap for television. That just, it's super easy. It just plugs right into your TV and it works. Even after the deal, it's only $25 a month. So still like a third the price of other TV providers, if not better than that. It's very simple. It's very affordable. Anyone in the Denver metro area should just switch to it. And also they have some other random locations around the country like Idaho. If one of those is an option for you, would highly recommend you guys go check it out. And then we get to tell you that we're TV stars now. So
that's right. Don't forget it.
You know, we're the high rollers now. No one can touch us. Something like that. I don't know. Go check out Evoca TV today. Highly recommend. Those guys are amazing. And of course, also brought to you by Lightshade. You can find one of their 11 locations in the Denver metro area. Highly recommend their Ripple products that they sell in store. You know, when you were in college and you were learning how to make edibles and they all tasted like really shitty weed. Yeah,
was this a class that you took?
I had a different college experience.
I was supposed to be in class when I was doing it.
You know, middle school home ec, and they're teaching you how to make edibles.
I was going to say that Colorado State education.
Yeah.
It's different, man.
Yo, my upstairs neighbor taught us how to do knife hits. It was a different time. Okay.
Colorado Mountain College or some shit? Damn.
But Ripple solves any of those problems because it's a tasteless, I guess salt, you would call it, a tasteless powder that you can just pour into like your brownie batter or your lemonade or anything you want. And it's like drinking lemonade, but it's got THC in it now. It's amazing. It's genuinely like the coolest product I've ever seen when it comes to CBD and THC. So go check them out. They also have their Rip Sticks, which you can just pour right on your tongue. If you need some fast acting THC, that stuff activates in like 10 minutes. Get you as
what a
as
name.
The Rip Sticks. Yeah.
Rip Sticks.
It's very like 90s hardcore. I was gonna say, branding.
Sounds like a 90s attempt at selling hockey sticks.
I feel like weren't Rip Sticks those things that you had to like swivel
the
on
the single wheel? Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Great product.
Okay. Go over to Lightshade just for the naming branding of these products. You can get 25% off with code DNVR too, so you can get some great deals. I highly recommend 11 different locations in the Denver metro area. Third period of the DNVR Avalanche podcast. I don't want to put any pressure on the entire Avalanche organization, but the win the Kelly Cup, win the Calder Cup, win the Stanley Cup, the triple crown, as they say, is on the line here. All three levels of professional Avalanche organization is still in it. The Grizzlies are in the conference finals. The Eagles are about to start their conference finals next week, and the Avs in round two, obviously. Eagles are taking on Stockton Heat. I don't want to be down on them, but I feel like they have the hardest series coming up right now, Megan.
So hold on. Before we even get there, I just got to ask this question. Megan, did you see this coming? Like, did you see them getting this far, let alone in the fashion that they've gotten there?
No, not to diminish the season that they had, but I just feel like they're a different team in the playoffs than they were in the regular season. Yeah. In a good way.
For sure. Obviously I'm not as quite like dialed into the minutia of the Eagles as you are, but like I consider myself to be like relatively tuned into like what they've got going on. And I was like, oh, nice. They comfortably got into the playoffs, kind of see how the first round goes. I didn't see them being fucking 5-0 heading into the conference finals. Good for them.
So Rusko is correct. I guess technically the quadruple crown is still on the line because DU did win. Can't take anything away from the college because it's not professional at that point, but still.
If the Eagles and the Avs win their respective cups, Colorado's the new state of hockey, undisputed. Minnesota can go fuck itself.
We should just make state of hockey town and just take both, like all at once. Just like
state of hockey town sounds dumbest thing I've ever heard. We have to co-opt this.
Start the shirt.
Hockey town state of mind. I think that's where I'm going with that one. Okay, but for real, it is an interesting conversation. With the Eagles also making a deep playoff run. First of all, Megan, expectations for Heat versus Eagles.
Just stop at that facial expression.
I'm sorry. Well, I underestimated the Avs, right, for their first round. I said, oh, it's going to be a 6-game series. And I look back and I feel regret over that. And I kind of underestimated the Eagles even in their first and second round. I think I had Ontario going to something like 5 games. I think I had it going the full 5. So I don't want to make that mistake again with the Eagles either, especially with the momentum that they've built. But I think that this is something that they can get done in 4 games. I think if they can win at least one in Stockton to start the series, that they'll be sitting pretty because there's just, they've described the atmosphere at Budweiser Event Center as like having a 6-man on the ice. And I think that's very true for them. And Stockton doesn't have that home ice advantage because the crowd just isn't as engaged as they are at the BEC. And so I think the Eagles can do this. It's just not going to be an easy feat because what Stockton brings to the table as a team is just really good and has been consistently all season.
Oh, Heat are really good.
Yep.
Good.
No. Go ahead. Because this is kind of
that's it. Great goaltending. Like, just they're very similar to the Eagles in a lot of ways, and that's why I'm glad to see Eustace playing as well as he is right now because that's one of the greatest strengths of Stockton. But beyond that, there are a lot of similar tools that they both have in areas that they each excel at that I think we talked about matchups with the Avs, but I think there are going to be some pretty level matchups too between Stockton and Eagles, at least with respect to where the Eagles are at now. They're really healthy. They have a lot of forward depth. Is this the Shane Bowers conversation yet?
Might as well be.
So I want to go back to what you were saying about Budweiser Event Center. Because you may have even have been in the room, Megan, when Dylan Sakura was on a call up and someone asked him about being with the Eagles. And obviously he played 2 seasons with Rockford, the Ice Hogs, Chicago's AHL team. Then he played with the Henderson Silver Knights last year. So the guy has played a lot of AHL hockey. He's been in a lot of buildings and he said that building is without a doubt the loudest, the most rowdy AHL crowd I've ever played in front of. And AJ, you and I went up there a few times with BSN when they were still in the ECHL. Now, something you and I commented on, like, it is just rare to find wherever it is that has a fan base that's that passionate, that engaged,
yeah,
every single night. And I do feel like at that level, I absolutely feel like that makes a difference, because like you go play a game at the SAP Center for the San Jose Barracuda, the building is, you know, a tenth full, and people are just kind of there to, we can't really watch the Sharks. They're not playing. They're off. They're on the road, whatever. Like, Eagles fans, that is their team. Like, they are Eagles fans, and by association, Avs fans, not the other way around. And I just think it's such an interesting dynamic up there, because you just, like, even in, again, parts of Canada, you don't see that type of support for AHL hockey teams. And I do just think it makes a big difference. I think you make a great point.
There's a reason Stockton is relocating too, that you're just not bringing the revenue despite having such a great on-ice product. And other players have reiterated the same thing about playing in front of that home crowd. And Oscar Olsson was really surprised by how electric it was there. It gets louder in the playoffs somehow every game.
Well, AJ, I remember you and I being worried about them moving from the E up to the American League, because we were like, wow, these fans have really become used to winning and playoff runs and watching a really successful team. And I can't help but think a little bit. Obviously, there's so many on-ice factors and you know, front office decisions that go into this. Like, I can't help but think that, like, there is a little bit of that just, like, magic up there at Budweiser Events Center, that suddenly, for the first time, the Avs have a somewhat successful AHL team, and it just so happens to be lined up with, you know, them becoming the Colorado Eagles and playing out of that building and in front of that community. Again, maybe a small, tiny factor, but it is just a little coincidental.
Yeah. I mean, they've been okay. Like, this was the first year that they'd ever won a playoff series.
Right.
So, like, you know, and for the Avs, just getting to the postseason in the at the AHL level was an accomplishment.
Big deal.
This year, it was more or less given. I think
seven of the eight teams,
full Pacific Division, got to make the playoffs, and then they whittled it down from there. But once in, like, obviously, this has been easily the best AHL run for the Avalanche organization in a long time, and Stockton's gonna be a great test.
I think they finished like fourth overall in the league, which actually surprised me just based on where they finished in their division, and it speaks to the difficulties of playing in the Pacific Division. And I'm kind of speculating here, but I've heard different things about Cronin as a coach, and I've also heard that there's just something different about him as a coach this season that I think has really benefited the Eagles, especially from a development perspective. And I think that, I don't know that he's changed his coaching style anyway, because I don't have a frame of reference what that looked like before, but I'm led to believe that he has made some changes and that it's been really effective with the players too.
Megan, have you talked to anybody about the impact that it has being so close to the Avs, and the fact that, I know Bednar has talked about, they have regular, multiple times a week meetings with Cronin. I mean, Joe Sakic goes down and watches games from there more often than probably the average GM gets to his AHL building. Do you think that has any type of impact on Cronin and his staff?
I do, because I like to ask a lot of questions about the prospects and how decisions get made with call-ups, and it always leads back to this line of communication that exists between the front office and Cronin and Billington. And it sounds like they're in such regular and constant communication and involved with really micro decisions that are happening with the Eagles, that I think that when the parent club is succeeding the way that they do, it definitely has an impact on the Eagles as well.
Rubs off, yeah.
Okay. All right. Make me sad about Shane Bowers now.
You know, I feel like I buried the lead on that too, because it was at the end of the regular season, I want to say between like March 23rd through April 2nd or 6th, that He just sat a bunch of games. And the concern with Bowers has always been, is it an injury? And so I asked about it, and Cronin was very respectful in how he addressed this, but he talked about it being a luxury that they have the forward depth that they do, and that with Shane specifically, there were a couple other guys who are also talented that were sitting at this time. It's rotated, but Fontaine has been a healthy scratch at points. Wingerly has as well. Sometimes even Burke is the odd man out, and he's also a really talented centerman that helps them a lot. So with Bowers specifically, I don't know if it's really a great reflection of anything that's gone so wrong in his game, other than when he returned from injury in the season, he just wasn't that visible and didn't have a huge impact. If you look at his points totals at the end of this season, it is a little hard to justify putting him in the lineup over some other guys that have been available. And I think specifically at the end of the season, a lot of why he sat had to do with his strength. I think physically the teams that they were playing were Ontario and Stockton, and they're physically such tough teams that I think he saw Bowers as a little bit of a liability there. And that's why someone like Smith played in his place, because Smith is just a very big guy. So with getting this opportunity now back in the playoffs, it's serendipitous is actually how Crowan explained it, because there are some guys that have been injured that made this opportunity possible for Bowers to play again. And he definitely looked visible when he did return to the lineup here in the playoffs. But I think with him throughout this season, injury set him back, and then he had trouble making himself visible.
All right. Let's jump from Bowers to a much more positive prospect story of the playoffs. I guess the ending for Bowers there so far has been positive. I don't want to take that away from him.
No, there's still opportunity there. It's just not an easy path for him right now.
But at the same time, has this playoffs been the coming out party for Jean-Luc Foudy that I think it is?
Yes, that's like one of my favorite storylines from what's happened in one this entire season, just the growth that he's had as a player and what he is pulling off in the playoffs. And I tried to ask him about it. And he just credited his line mates for, you know, helping to make him better and was really humble about it. But he has developed so nicely this season, like still lots of work to do, but he has really come alive in the playoffs, and it doesn't hurt being on the second line. It's all about opportunity. Like, it is hard for Sampo Ranta to be visible on the fourth line, but Foudy has a golden opportunity on the second line, and it's paying off in a big way.
AJ, you still want to play him as a defenseman?
He's going to be a great defenseman when he's all grown up.
Defenseman Jean-Luc Foudy. I don't know if I trust him yet defensively, but he's working on it.
Look, you don't have to be that good defensively when you're scoring overtime winners, okay?
Yeah, that was really poetic.
Yeah, that was fun.
We do have a few super chats to get to here. $2 from Kevin. Can't wait for game two. Hashtag find a way.
Oh my God. I got home last night and I got done with editing, and it was right before I started writing. And I was like, yep, I'm ready for game two. Let's just go. Let's go. Let's just get to it. Let's just do this.
$10 from Kenneth for the DNVR Stanley Cup party. Dude, I want the Avs to make the cup just because the bar is going to be actually like a madhouse if they do. Like, it's going to be so fun.
Did you say they should close the block? I feel like that'd be so fun.
Oh, yes, they should absolutely close the block.
I keep telling Brandon this. Just get a giant projector, put it on the brick building. Like,
just go ham.
Yeah, take over the whole street.
$20 from Eddie. I'm about to graduate, so I just want to shout all of you out for helping me get through the final 2.5 years of high school. You guys rock, and I love all of you. Have a good pod.
Bro, Eddie, the last year of high school.
It's brutal, man.
Tough one to get through.
All 4 years. The grind. The grind.
Yeah. Appreciate you. You're one of our dudes, Eddie. So
yeah. Bad luck that we can't make the graduation party, because
yeah, you schedule it for an Avs game day, bud.
Three is at the same time, and so it was like, all right.
It's the way it goes. Are there any topics I missed for today? Was there anything else anyone wanted to touch on?
Sam Girard's doing all right. Said he's good. I went back and found that shift where it looked like he got stung pretty good. Yeah, I guess he went to the X-ray room after.
Okay. Yeah, actually, I'm glad you brought this up. For the record, since Chambers tweeted it out that he like rode the golf cart,
they all. So this is where I was going with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a normal process. Just for some added context there, guys regularly will ride the golf cart because they're usually still wearing some of their gear and it's just faster because they've got
the
shut down. And so they just ride the golf cart from the locker room to the X-ray room. No big deal. That is a normal thing.
The other place I was going with that, on top of everything AJ just said, being completely accurate, the Avs were using the golf cart a lot last night because they had to do Sportsnet, TNT, and regular media availability. So, like, Josh Manson and Gabe Landeskog showed up to media availability in the golf cart. And so, like, they were just using it to, like, transport guys around last night. And on top of that, like AJ said, anytime guys have, you know, X-ray stuff, lower body, it's almost always on the golf cart.
Yeah.
And I think it was Tyler Palumbis from 104.3 ex-Bronco who was talking about this a few weeks ago because D-Mac and I had seen Josh Manson going to the X-ray room. This was regular season. And Tyler Palumbis, former Denver Bronco, was saying, he's like, yeah, dude, that's extremely commonplace. He's like, more guys go to the X-ray room after games than you would realize.
Yeah.
Like the first thing you do after games is you say, hey, are you feeling all right? Like you check in with the trainers. This feels funny. Oh, I'm good. I blocked that shot. He goes, they get X-rays for everything.
Yeah.
And 95% of the time people are none the wiser.
Yeah. And well, and the only reason it ever becomes a thing is because the hallway that we walked down,
right,
like, is where the X-ray room is. So it's just not, it's just not that big of a deal because they, like you said, they do it all the time. Manson, I've seen Manson get X-rayed. Like, that guy gets X-rayed all the time.
Do you think he tells the X-ray guy nice play every time?
Yeah.
Dude, he's such a phenomenal interview. He's the exact opposite. Like Darren Helm, super nice guy. But if I had to hear that guy say pucks in deep one more time this morning, I was going to get up and walk out of the media room. I was like, bro, we get it. We get it. And Manson's just very
Josh Manson.
Yeah. Well, there's the fact that
he's like the go-to mic'd up guy now because everybody's like,
yeah. And like you find out he was telling us that when he first got to Colorado that it actually wasn't until he was like in his, like a teenager that he decided to pursue hockey full time. He wanted to go be a pro snowboarder. And I was like, oh
yeah, no, that adds up.
That's
yep,
cool.
Yep. Yeah. So he said that he like gave up snowboarding over a decade ago because of hockey and stuff. But I'll bet you he's sick. Like I bet you that dude just like rips it up. Who's putting all of these? I don't know why.
Yaya going off today.
I was gonna say.
No, I changed that. I thought it was funny.
Okay. I guess that's it. We've reached the end of the show for today. So thank you everyone for watching, listening, however you consume the pod. We appreciate all of y'all a ton. We will be back tomorrow with pregame, watch along postgame. I should be at the bar. I'm not going to make any guarantees, but, you know, negative tests got to be coming pretty soon here. Either way, be sure to tune into all of that. Also, two more round two series start today. We have videos on the YouTube previewing both the battle for Alberta and the East Coast series between the Rangers and Carolina. So go check those out if you want to prep yourself for the series today. But other than that, we are out of here and we will talk to you on the next one.